the future lies in the interfaces of different industries, right? So the disruption happens exactly, I guess, when the industries are overlapping or in the interfaces of things. So, and I think I do have advantage having seen different industries and behind the scenes and from different angles as an advisor, as an entrepreneur, as an investor. So all of that have probably enriched my ability to get a certain pattern, to recognize a certain pattern. But of course, investment or being angel is a lot more than just picking the right deals, I think.
This is FEMA Business Angel Podcast,
your go-to destination if you're a business angel or would like to get into angel investing and don't know where to start.
Or if you just want to find out how we tick. We're Tina and Katja, both business angels from Berlin. Well, I'm a VC now. We will interview established female business angels about how they got started and how it is going, including all the best tips and tricks.
So get ready for some insider stories and personal empowering moments and revelations with these incredible women.
Welcome to this journey with us.
Hello, welcome to Female Business Angels Podcast. We are having a very special guest today. First guest who is not based in Berlin. We would like to welcome Lynn. Hello, Lynn.
Hi, Katja.
She's an entrepreneur turned angel investor. She's a startup advisor and board member. She's also a mom of three kids and she lives in Stockholm. Her investment focus are impact startups. And ideally, when we have our guests here, we ask them to introduce themselves as well and to tell us about their personal and professional story. So I know that Lynn, you lived in quite a few countries. You also speak three languages, if I'm not mistaken. So tell us more. How did it all start?
Yeah, thank you so much, Katja, and such a pleasure to be here. We know each other for quite some time, but I think this is a really great platform to talk about the story and to get some inspirations. So first things first, the ultimate question, who I am. I am a global citizen. So the first third of my life, I'm born Chinese and I spent in China from Beijing. The second third of my life, equally amount of time I spent in Germany. I went to school, I studied and started my career in management consultancy based in Munich. And the last third of my life, we have been traveling quite a bit. Because of my husband's career, we moved a couple of countries, like you said. so we have moved from Germany to India, from India to Sri Lanka, and now from Sri Lanka back to Europe, and now based in Stockholm, Sweden. Yeah, that is me, and I'm a mother of three kids, aged from 5 to 10. A very sweet age, but very independent already. I co-founded or launched three new businesses in my life, three kids and three new businesses, two in e-commerce.
So six
and
startups
one
in total. You could say that.
Or six babies, yeah. Yeah,
raising
so two in
babies.
E-commerce, yeah. and one in education technology. Yeah, so I would like to see them as babies. Now I'm a full-time investor, and I support startups as a mentor, advisor, or board member. Yeah, that is myself.
That's really cool. So, and having lived in so many cultures, what is the country or the culture you feel like most comfortable with or in?
Yeah, a really good question, but very difficult one. I guess that's the reason why I said I'm a global citizen, because I do feel I'm a little bit of everything. It is not something that I'm really proud of, but it is how I am. I think I feel comfortable in many different cultures, not only in the East Asian Chinese culture or European German culture. I think my strength is to adapt into a culture very quickly and find the way to navigate, to survive, and also not to lose myself.
And to thrive.
So, yeah. I mean, it's similar for yourself, right? You also come from a very international background and have lived in many countries.
Consider myself a European, I guess. I don't think I have, like, sometimes I do have cultural shock when I travel around a bit. But, So I guess I feel, the most comfortable place for me is Europe. But of course, I think it's up to people, not to, like, cultures or the country of origin, if you get along with them or not. So, and how did you find your way into angel investing, and how did you become full-time investor?
I guess my doors have always been open for startups because I was a founder myself. So when I founded my first company, that was 2013, I started helping other startups as well, with advices, with contacts, and eventually with money. So I kind of very naturally turned into an investor. I never really searched for that. But I did take quite some time to think about being a full-time investor. So as a family, like I said, we have been moving quite a bit the last 8 to 10 years. It has been a tremendous fulfilling experience for me, just to get to see those beautiful places and meet very different people, to understand different culture, and also I think I built my career within different countries and learned a lot doing that, and also I think I have successfully reinvented myself every time we moved and had some unique opportunities. But this time when we moved to Sweden, it was in the middle of the pandemic, and I had a lot of time thinking what I really want in my life, and I think as a founder, and I think all the entrepreneurs in the world will agree with me probably, once you have been an entrepreneur, there's no way back anymore. So I always have this calling to do something myself, and I see a lot of things I want to do differently, and keep asking why, and all of that. So I really want to be an entrepreneur, but because of my family situation, I think I need to be very flexible. There are different things in life as well, which are important. So, I needed a model that will allow me the flexibility, but still I feel I can feel fulfilled, and I can combine the passion of being entrepreneur with what I'm good at, which is managing a portfolio, which is looking at diverse topics and looking at international topics, just because of my background, having done many different things and live in different countries. So I think, and I came very naturally, I think, to the conclusion that probably angel investment is the best, because I have very much the flexibility and I can combine the passion, being entrepreneur or being around with entrepreneurs, and my strengths of managing a portfolio and dive into different topics quickly.
Yeah, and we've been assessing a couple of deals together, and I think you're really good at kind of dissecting business models as well, and unit economics, all the costs. So you have a very sharp pragmatic mind, like from the very beginning. So even if you see a very early stage idea, it feels for me that sometimes you have this incredibly long Excel sheet in your head and like a consultant presentation already made, like in fraction of seconds, and you already know like what are the weak points, what are the strengths. So this is something I'm really admiring about you, and when we're having our conversations about potential investments. So I don't know if you see it in the similar way, if you would agree.
That's such a compliment. Luckily, it's only audio, so you don't see me blush. But thank you so much. I think I love complexity, and not because I think I'm outsmarting anyone or anything in the market, but it's just, I think, my experience having lived in different culture and have done many different things. I started my career as a management consultant in automotive industry in Germany, and I have done also energy topics and telco topics, or later on I ventured into design, the creative industry. So I've seen quite a few industries, and my own startup was in e-commerce, again different ones. So I think and the future lies in the interfaces of different industries, right? So the disruption happens exactly, I guess, when the industries are overlapping or in the interfaces of things. So, and I think I do have advantage having seen different industries and behind the scenes and from different angles as an advisor, as an entrepreneur, as an investor. So all of that have probably enriched my ability to get a certain pattern, to recognize a certain pattern. But of course, investment or being angel is a lot more than just picking the right deals, I think.
Yeah. What would you say? What else is important? Because
I initially when I started, I thought, you know, oh, actually my biggest strength is evaluating deals because, so being an entrepreneur, I have seen from the inside, and also being a management consultant, I learned how to quickly go into a topic and find the core. But then I noticed as an investor, there are so many steps actually, starting from sourcing the deals, right? So how do you get into deals? Is it you actively search for it, or is it passive? You have built a brand and the startups come to you. So it starts with that, because as a solo investor or angel investor, you don't have an engine, you don't have a machine which works for you. So it's very,
let's
you have
see
to really
podcast
carefully
will change something.
Yeah, you have to very carefully, yeah, to think about your time, and a sourcing deal is a very important part of this, because exactly, and how many deals can you see as a single person, right? So, and there are millions of startups, great startups out there, but okay, you can choose, but you don't get to see them, so there is no point. And then also later on, I think another learning I have made is the excess of deals. Of course, you get to see them, and hopefully, you choose the right ones. But it's not always the case that the startups choose you, because they also want, especially the good startups, they also want the best in their cap table. So why should they choose you? What is your value add, and what is your story, and how can you help? And so, of course, as an angel investor, you cannot fill the round. So money is not the biggest argument. So you have to have a lot more things, right? So there are so many elements to it, and everything is kind of connected, and it is a flywheel itself. So if you get to see better deals, you get to select better, and when you select better, you get to make better track record, and when you have better track record, you get to see better deals. So it's a long process, and it's also challenging because it is long and you don't have a reference point very quickly. As an entrepreneur, I think the biggest advantage is you can iterate very quickly. You have you can try, error, and learn and change and adapt and then grow quickly. But as an investor, that the cycle is so long, and how do you know? There's a lot of hype in the market, and you have to have a lot of conviction and a lot of mental strength, I think, to also stick to what you believe in and your gut feel or your data points and analysis, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess it's gut feel combined with data points, so with the analytical part of dissecting deals and evaluating them properly.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it comes with time, the pattern recognition, after you see, you know, many startups at this stage, and you have talked to so many founders, and it will come. You will build a very natural hypothesis of your investment strategy, and It's only, I guess the reference point is takes a little longer.
Yeah.
You know, the only time will prove who's right, who's wrong, who's lucky.
That's true. It's like the human analogy to machine learning, right? To pattern recognitions. And,
yeah, exactly.
But sometimes there are also some surprising exceptions as well. So, and what would you say is the average cycle of deal making? So is it months, weeks, days, years? Because you just said, okay, sometimes it takes a long time. I have a feeling that that's true. So sometimes you really know you would invest in some great people even before they had their company idea, the startup idea, or even before they left their current job, you know, you would back them like 100%, and you do. Maybe years later or months later. And sometimes my perception is that really good deals could happen in a matter of days.
Yeah, you mean the evaluation period or...
In general, from, I don't know, knowing about this deal happening, about this startup, or, I don't know, approaching them, or maybe they approach you and...
Right. That's a very good question. It really is very different. So I have the fastest deal or the fastest check I have made, I think it was within a day. Also because they're closing, and I have not spoken to the founder. That was a little crazy.
Wow.
And but also that was very at the beginning of my investor career. So I think it was just something magical happened, and that's the beauty of angel investment, right? You can do whatever you like, and free, everyone has their own style. We're all gifted differently. Some are good with numbers, and some are good with people, and some are good with business models, and so on and so forth. So, and I think I do. My conviction comes from one is the market. Do I believe in this market? Do I think, you know, this is really a big coming market? It might not be big today, but I believe the trend's going that way. It's a mega trends, and so that is something that I spend a lot of time thinking, really the big picture, and then I. Of course, need to have a really good gut feel about the founder. And that is mostly difficult because from, you know, virtual meetings, of course, you don't really know. But at least I try to understand how they tick, if I can work with them, if they carry a fire, you know, to a hunger to know things, to discover things, the curiosity, and also do they have original ideas or not? And of course, if there is a founder market fit, so-called. So, and in this case, where I wrote a check very quickly was in a vertical marketplace for climate. It's called We Don't Have Time. It's a Swedish startup. And I love the name from the first minute. And I thought, you know, if there is one thing about this issue, then it is we don't have time. We just don't fucking have time.
We don't.
And it is so true. Yeah, we don't. And then I found the founder exceptionally brave and very outspoken. And I think for social media or community builder, you need someone who is like that and who has no fear, who can challenge, you know, Facebook. And also the reason he gave why there is a room for such a vertical marketplace, he said, you know, because the current marketplaces, they have bias and they are sponsored by the traditional industries, so they will never go against them. And that kind of struck me and it totally made sense. And so, and I really believe in vertical marketplaces. I'm not a heavy social media user, you know, but I do think it has a lot of value, and especially I really want to see social media marketplaces doing good things. And yeah. I think this is one of the great social media marketplaces. And the numbers also just were right, because you see when a startup in climate industry, when they do an event on We Don't Have Time versus when they do an event on Facebook or Instagram, it's a huge difference. It's very targeted, very sticky audience, and they get millions of people watching it. So it's very active and it's very engaged. It's very loyal, a really good retention. attention. So yeah, and I just made the step.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to dare and jump into it. And what is exactly their business model? Because I remember you told me about that startup. So what's the business model?
Yeah, the business model is they want to connect the supply and the demand of climate solutions. So currently it is more a social media where people or businesses are promoting solutions. But ultimately what they are trying to build is they want to give the solution providers, startups or bigger corporate companies mm-hmm. who provide a climate solution, a platform also to market their solutions and find buyers and connect with audience and get supporters and so on and so forth. So and the other way they are building was to have more data points also, because talking about climate issues, I think the transparency and the right data points is still not available. It's very fragmented, and but before we have the transparency, it's very difficult to have any action. So that is also something that I think very interesting, and only a platform will be able to provide a top-down view and the right transparency and get the people together, get the community together. And only together we can solve that problem. So
yeah. No, it sounds very convincing. I'm sold as well. And how did you get in touch with them? How did you source this deal, or did they source you?
No, I actually both. Yeah, you're right. So how did I saw them on one of the club demos. So there are different Android clubs. I don't remember exactly where, but I saw a demo. So they were the founder was on stage talking about this startup, and then I joined that event. And then he had this participants list, the founder, he had the participants list, and he went through the list probably. I don't know how many were on that. And then he reached out. I think probably he has reached out to everyone. I don't know if he has selected a few, but he reached out to me on LinkedIn. So I was very interested and enticed when I saw, you know, the idea and the person for that idea. And but he reached out to me and sent me the deck and offered, you know, if I want to have a chat. And I studied it and I was pretty convinced, but they want to close the deal actually quickly by the end of that week. So I said, okay, don't worry, I would put in a small ticket. Yeah, we can speak later.
I mean, yeah. Sometimes, I my first angel investment also happened really, really quick. It was really fast. And I was super convinced about the business model and found the market fit and about this magic in the founders. And that's when I decided to become angel investor. So I can relate. I can relate to that. How did your very, very first angel investment happen? Do you remember that? Was it also like a spontaneous, quick move, or were you striving to become an angel investor, or was it a coincidence?
The first one, actually, I did not actively take the decision. I think I was not so convinced, but my husband was very convinced, so we went in. So it was actually not it was not love for the first sight for me. So because it's for the family, and both my husband and myself, we take different turns to lead. And in my case, that the first one that I led and took the decision was also very fast. It was not a very early stage. It was a more later stage, not very late, but after Series A already, and they're doing a bridge round, which is normally, you know, people don't really, really like bridge round. But I looked at the product. I come from a product background, digital product, and I really like the product, I have to say. And without looking at other things. And the monetization model was not, you know, did not have a proof. And a lot of things, I think, was not 100%. But because I really liked the product, I think I took the decision. And also, in that case, I didn't take a lot of time speaking to the founder. So it was a conviction because of the product.
Yeah. So you don't regret it?
No. It has turned out to be one of the best, actually.
Which one is it? Would you like to tell our listeners?
Yeah, it was Ada Health.
Okay, that's quite a famous company right now. I mean, it's pretty
well
known.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it's a health tech company based out of Berlin, and they are doing like symptom diagnostic, right? Based on AI.
Exactly.
So ADA. Yeah, you have quite a few very, very, very impressive companies in your portfolio. So, and I think I would like to summarize the learnings that for the founders that you were telling us about. Being like bold and brave, so being actually pitching at those angel demo days. So you should be there present if you are a founder wanting to raise money from business angels, female business angels, and also be proactive and reach out. And that's true. Sometimes it's not only a deep analysis about like big picture macro trends and market fit or product. Sometimes it can be love at the first sight. And I would agree so many, many times, you know, in the first couple of seconds, if you're sold or not. But then, of course, you have to do some due diligence and sleep over it, talk to other people, some industry experts, grab some references. So I think that's super interesting. And so you've done some health tech, vertical marketplaces, B2B, climate tech, and now you would like to focus on impact investing, like 100%. That's correct.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes, that is totally correct. So, and I decided also to more focus on applied AI as a business model. So, what I think really excites me is to see how deep tech or technology in general can really make a positive impact and to solve the biggest problems for mankind. And especially in those industries, impact industries like education, health, food, climate. And why applied AI? I said the third business that I have co-founded or launched was in education technology, and that was a new kind of university for applied AI. And so what I see is AI is coming into all the industries, right? So it's a must. It's a big trend, and there is no way around it. And but the technology itself, I think, is becoming more and more commodity even. The real question is actually how AI is applied to every each industry and how the AI business model looks like. And that is actually really interesting, because I think a lot of people or startups to start with, they think, you know, AI is the technology itself is a moat, or the data is a moat, but that is something actually that has not proved itself. Because if you think about it, the AI model, there are so many infrastructure providers or like AWS or Azure, or they have pre-trained model, and there is a GPT-3. Right, for NLP. And so the models are getting more and more advanced and pre-trained, and so it's not like you, as a startup, you really have to build a model from the scratch. And then the other question with the data is the question, I think, is really the use case, right? So people think, if I have more data, then the accuracy of the model will be better. Eventually, yes. But how many cases do you really need 100% accuracy, right? Maybe only in healthcare cases, where you really need to tell exactly if it's cancer or not, or you know. But there are many, many use cases where you don't need 100% accuracy. And for that, actually, you don't need so much data to reach a reasonable level to predict. And then the question is, what do you do with the long tail data, right? Do you need, because the long tail data will become a cost component in the end, because it is expensive to label the data, to clean the data, to maintain the data, to store the data, to transform the data. So there are so many things, and it all related to cost. And if your long tail data does not add any value, why do you need it, right? So the data moat is, I'm always, you know, in doubt if startups say it's a data moat, and because I have a lot more data, and also how many times is preparatory data, right? So it's only a matter of money or time probably. So, and that is not a moat in the end, not like a network effect or other moat. So then I think the key question is really the business model. How do you build your business around AI? And is it a service business, or you know, how do you build defensibility? How do you control your cost structure? Because compared to a SaaS model, the AI business models have a much lower gross margin because of the infrastructure cost and the data cost is just more expensive. So, and I find it really, really interesting. And I think because there is a big trend for that, and very few investors really understand the technology, and even less understand the business model. So I do see some kind of advantage to go in there. And and of course, I have that excitement when I think about how AI or deep tech is solving these big problems in different industries. And that is exactly the topics that I really want to focus in the future.
Yeah, so have this niche expertise and position yourself as a deep tech applied AI focused investor.
Yes, and exactly.
So what could be, I mean, I think, those are like, I mean, they're kind of... So those are, the description of applied AI. It's we all understand it. I mean, we are in touch with it every single day. But I guess it's still like a bit difficult to grasp. So what could be like the perfect startup you would invest in? Maybe it does not exist yet, but what could you envision? I don't know. In my case, it would be, for example, something related to Web3 that is making the interfaces more usable for mass consumers, where people could where people would not even realize they are using something that is like based on blockchain or Web3, so it would look normal, super usable. You would not have to connect like 5 wallets and I don't know, transfer funds and so on. You would just use something like we use like our nowadays Web2 applications. It would be user-friendly. I don't know, my mom could use it, my little daughter, so everyone could click on it. And so that would be like my ideal use case. So like Web3, consumerized, something for like communities, I don't know, B2C digital product, app, maybe a game.
Yeah.
What would it be for you? Yeah.
Yeah, that is really interesting, Katya. And I just want to make a comment there, because I was just discussing with my husband the other day, and he had this idea of a B2C marketplace to create your own NFT. And he said, you know, I have been thinking about this idea, and if I had time or in another life, I would really want to do this startup myself, or maybe there is such a startup already. And I think it's very much goes in the same direction as what you just mentioned. And let us know when you find such a startup we want to invest as well.
Maybe
that's a really great
ourselves.
Idea.
Yeah. So what would be your perfect applied AI startup? What could it be?
I think Ada House is pretty much a use case that I really like. It is using AI to solve a specific problem. I also very much like the consumer side because of my e-commerce background, and to think about having a solution which has an impact on really a mass market, like millions of people, that really excites me. And it should be in the impact industry. It can be even something like adaptive learning. learning for, you know, for K-12 kids, or it can be, I don't know, mental health, how to solve mental health problem with AI as a chatbot. I have looked at quite a few startups there and made a small syndicate investments in VBoat. And I recently looked at a startup which is in AI for legal, although it's not an impact industry, but that was also very interesting because they're helping the SMB, small, medium businesses, to solve the legal issues. And I think it's also really interesting. I made a commitment, but in the end, I got pushed out by YC. So I was not fast enough to wire the money. And then YC made the offer and said, we're closing this round and the small investors are going out again. So
learning, yeah, be that faster again, than YC.
Yeah, be faster than YC, but also, you know, how do you compete with YC with your value add, right? So why should the founder choose you in the end? I mean, it's really difficult to compete with YC, but I guess that was a really good learning. And so it can be in many different industries, and I get excited to think about if it's a bigger problem that they're solving, and there are different, you know, categories. Some are painkillers, so-called painkillers. Some are the vitamins, and I guess I'm more in the painkiller category. to solve the critical issues rather than, you know, giving pleasure.
I've just read about this analogy in the Super Founders book. I guess it's from there. So yeah, there is a statistic analysis that painkillers, that startups that are actually solving the real problem, so statistically they have a higher chance to become billion-dollar companies.
Really?
Yeah. And then there are like vitamins. So I don't know, Instagram, for example, is vitamin, but I mean, it's a unicorn, of course. I mean, it was it was acquired by Facebook. So it's more difficult in the vitamins category, and it's more up to creating a very appealing, addictive, glossy brand. Mm. So So, but it's very interesting. Yeah, it sounds like you should get involved with entrepreneurs first and maybe become a mentor there or a venture partner, because they have lots of deep tech startups.
Yeah, I really like their concept, I have to say. I think they're one of the really greatest incubator, and I have the recent batch also I have looked at, and it's really good quality, and I really believe in their philosophy of having two co-founders to start with. One is a tech heavy background, and the other one is commercial background, and I think they have a really good concept, and I also personally really believe in this indexing kind of concept, to go in early and then to have a larger portfolio of startups.
Sounds like, okay, they are not sponsoring this podcast, just to make it clear. But yeah, you're doing a great job, like entrepreneurs first. And I guess for all the aspiring deep tech founders or angel investors who are interested in deep tech, they should definitely have entrepreneurs first on their radar. We will tag them on our LinkedIn post. And this is like super fascinating, like everything you've been sharing so far. And we normally we ask, what is the ultimate advice you would give to aspiring angel investors, like especially female angel investors? How could they start? How should they get into it, and why?
I think maybe a couple of hygiene things to start with. I think, like you said, the motivation itself is really important to think about why you want to do this. I have seen all different kinds of angels, right? They're doing angel investment. It can be a successful entrepreneur who has done an exit and don't know what to do, and you know they become angel investor just to bridge the time and looking for the next kick. Or it can, I have also seen a lot of successful corporate managers, and they're doing it on the side because they have a passion for that. And there are emerging investors who want to have an investor career and doing it as a stepping stone to build a track record. So there are all kinds of different motivations. And I think the beauty of angel investment is pretty much freestyle. And you learn so much from doing it. And there is no better way of just doing it. And the other thing I think is to set a budget, although it is totally fun and you learn a lot and you get to see really cool people. But as an asset class, investment asset class, I have to say, warning, it is the worst. It is not liquid and the chance, everyone, I hope, has heard about this power law, which is used more in the VC. So very few, maybe 10% of the VCs are really making 3x, and that is considered to be a good investment, right? So 3x means after 10 years, it's about 12% year-on-year growth of return. 12% of return, and that is considered to be good, and that is only 10% of the VCs, and these are institutional, professional investors. They have a machine behind it, what they do. And as angel investor, of course, the chance is even less. So don't look at it. I think someone who wants to do it for asymmetric profit or outsized profit, I think this is not a good idea probably to start, because probably you will get disappointed. It is one of the worst risk class asset. So I think to set a budget and to understand the risk that you're going into, but to enjoy the ride, not to think about, you know, I will get rich because of this. I think it's quite important as a mental orientation. And then I heard some really great advices, like from Jason Calacanis, one of the super angels, to go on many dates as possible, but don't get married. So I think that is also really a good advice, just to see initially when you start, don't be too in a hurry, you know, to write checks, but to really look at a few, and also now there are so many different investment platforms and different angel clubs that you can join, so that you can make smaller checks and invest alongside experienced angels. There is one very famous called AngelList from the US, where you can write checks from $1,000 and there are of course a lot of things different from investing as an equity angel investor. So as a syndicate, you don't have to source deals. So you get deals from syndicate leads, and you can decide if you want to invest or not, and then you can invest a small ticket size. I think that is a very good way to start as well, because you get to see, you get a deal flow and a very qualified deal flow from syndicate leads, and you get to, and you have a good calibration when you have your own deal flow, you know, which are considered to be good startups or not, what are the metrics you should look like, and what is the business model out there. And then there are some really interesting angel clubs, also in Germany, to name a few. Maybe there is Better Ventures for impact investment. There is Evangelistas for female angels. There is Capacura. And a lot more, right? So I think that is also very good. There are also, I think, ones for health, angel for health. There are ones for AI. So I think that is also a very good place to go to find like-minded people, to network with other investors, and because other investors will bring deal flow, and you get to discuss, and you can place also smaller tickets. And don't be afraid of making too small tickets. I think the impression sometimes is also you have to make at least, 50,000, but you can even make these days also smaller tickets if the startups agree, and there are different ways or different vehicles of doing it. And I think there is no better way to start. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I will summarize your advices. So first, find your motivation, find the why do you want to do it? Second, set a budget, and remember, it's a very risky asset class. Three, don't do it for money. And four, invest alongside more experienced angels, join angel clubs, join syndicates, and just start. So I think those are very, very good learnings and recommendations for for people who want to get involved with angel investing and with early stage startups. And I guess we are coming to an end of our interview. I don't know, maybe like the last question, which is a bit of like theoretical, like for the beginning of the new year, like 2022, what is the change you would like to see in the world? I mean, being an early stage investor, kind of you bet on the business models for the future. So I don't know if you could see, if you could change like one thing in the world, what would it be?
Wow, that is such a profound question. I've never thought about it, I have to say. If I could change one thing, what that would be.
Or maybe improve?
Yeah, I think there are so many things, but I think in the end, it boils down to how we are as people and how we are as people with each other. And I think if I look at the world today, I feel actually we are so connected. We are more connected than ever, but we are so apart more than ever. And that makes me really upset. So I think how we could unite as human, as people to go above, you know, the political things, what divide us, you know, the hatred or in terms of different social class or ethnic groups or whatever. So how can we find each other again? Because I think why human is so much better or more superior as other animals is that we can work together. And I think to make the life better for everyone, we have to unite again and to find some common ground and overcome the differences that we have. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing closing, especially like, because you like previously in the podcast, you said that the future lies in the intersection of different industries. And then, I mean, people make industry, so we have to unite and work together again. And so it's also like the human layer and connecting different sectors and kind of, grow together, like come closer.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah. Yeah, one of my key really mantra is to think win-win. And I think that is a very female, maybe biased, but I think this is a very female kind of a mentality, or at least I have heard it from many female colleagues, to think win-win. And that is, I think, really, really important in everything that we do, not to think about it's a zero-sum game. There is room for everyone, right? So it's only together we can do it better. Yeah. And only we're in the end all connected. It all comes back to, it's only a matter of time, but it all comes into circle.
Yeah, that's an amazing closing, like very philosophical, and it's perfect for the gray or sunny winter days or evenings. Thank you so much, Lynn. Thanks for sharing your wisdom and experiences.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for being with us here.
It was big fun. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.